Welcome to Phil and Ted's Sexy Boomer Show. I'm Ted Bonnet.
I'm Phil Proctor.
Oh, hi, Phil.
And I'm the real one. I knew two other Phil Proctors out here in L.A.
Really?
Can you believe that? The first one was the son of a publicist who worked for the Mark Taper Forum when I did Musica, my first major play down here. And then the second one is a stage manager at Pepperdine, Phil Proctor's.
Hmm.
Yeah, see? So,
do they impersonate you? Or
no, but I get their pensions,
nice.
Their checks and everything. So it's been good. It's
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to be here. We're here every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KPFK.
Barely. And we have a guest.
Oh, yes, our guest, Bill Cates. Hey, Bill.
Howdy.
And Bill's an old radio maven as well.
Yeah.
An old young radio.
He's a young-looking old maven.
Yeah.
Have you been watching that? I watched some of the trial today. I mean, you know, the updates on the trial.
Is the trial going on? What is that about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Evidently, there's an odor in the court.
Oh, odor in the court.
Oh, we've heard about that. Yeah.
Well, you know, James Carville said that people who worked with Trump said that he smelled like, you know, an outhouse.
It's the devil's due. And it's not going to be pretty.
A fart on you, John Proctor.
Oh, my God.
That's all I can say.
Oh, my God. Anyway, it's what an interesting time to be alive.
Yeah, you call this alive?
Well, it's live, that's for sure.
Yeah, this living?
I'm going to blow my nose.
Oh, nice. Oh. Great. You know, there's a cough button for that.
No, you know, we're only human.
Bill Cates.
Bill Cates,
our guest today. Bill, welcome.
Yeah.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. Thank you. Despite the severe tire damage.
Yes, we have to find parking here at our new location across from the police department. All right, so we can't park illegally.
Don't pull into the church parking lot off Clark Street.
Right, because it's got the tire shredders, which he didn't
see. No sign.
So you guys met.
You get a sign from God.
You are an audio radio producer.
Yes. I first met Phil and the rest of the Firesign guys in Boston years ago because I was a longtime Firesign fan since I was like 13 years old. I can probably blame the Firesign Theater for getting me into the radio business in the first place.
Not responsible.
At least partly because my dad loved old radio, and then my brother was a hippie, and I loved like the Beatles, and then I heard the Firesign Theater. It was like, oh my gosh, this is Orson Welles meets John Lennon.
And LSD.
And a little bit of that, too.
LSD.
And it really blew my mind, and I loved it. And I decided, I want to do what these guys do.
Oh, that's great.
So I learned about editing and making film at a little place called The Loft in Bronxville, New York. I was taught editing by a woman named Mary Lampson. And Mary Lampson was the editor for D.A. Pennybaker. Who made Don't Look Back and Milhouse and a lot
of great... on film here.
Yeah.
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 Great filmmaker.
So I learned how to cut tape and mix at the same time that I learned how to cut film.
Excellent.
But I really loved film from the sound perspective the most. I grew up going to see Leonard Bernstein and the New York Philharmonic, you know. So I love music. I just love all this stuff. And
was that the
musician.
Young People's Program? Did you see that?
The Young People's Concert.
I did, too.
Yeah.
We probably sat in there and didn't even know that we were in the same
place. Hey, my mom went on a double date with Leonard Bernstein.
Wow.
Oh, because he was both gay and straight and on the date?
Yeah, he was.
Why?
He was definitely bi.
He was bi.
Yeah.
He was doubling.
My mother was dating Vernon Duke.
Right.
Do you remember him? He was a composer. He was probably best known for writing Let Your Fingers Do the Walking in the Yellow Pages.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
So she had this wonderful double date with Leonard.
Wow.
She said it was incredible. He was just like bursting with energy.
Oh, that must have been wonderful.
I bet. That film really captured him.
This had to be, like late 40s.
Now, did they spoon or did they fork?
I don't know. I didn't ask my
mother. Yeah,
right. I didn't want to know, to be honest.
No. But Bradley Cooper really captured him amazingly. We used to meet him afterwards in the green room.
Yeah?
All the kids who knew would go up to the green room afterwards and say hello to Uncle Lenny. But anyway.
Wow.
So then I started an internship at WBCN in Boston, the legendary WBCN.
Yes, yes.
And got to know all these wonderful people there, including the guy who became my mentor, who was a man named Jerry Goodwin, who was a legendary Detroit disc jockey. And he became known, he called himself the Duke of Madness.
Oh,
and
he did.
For years, I had no idea that that was at all related to Firesign. But he loved radio theater, and I loved radio theater. And I basically just started – I was a news intern, and I started making these weird little bits in his in the news
drop-ins,
production studio.
Little drop-ins?
Things I wasn't – you know, I wasn't really supposed to do this, but I did it anyway.
That's the story, and I would, folks.
And I would give it – I would give the pieces to him, and I said, what do you think of this? And he was like, oh, my God, that's great. Let's put it on.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And – that's how I got started doing radio theater, making radio theater kind of my specialty in radio, which was a weird thing to do.
Yeah.
So, of course, I mostly made commercials, and I went from WBCN in Boston for 12 years to K-Rock in New York.
And I think we have a sample of something
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Time once again for the Howl of the Wolf movie.
Today's feature, High School Madness, has been preempted in order that we may bring you the 13th Annual Award Show Awards Award Show.
The award-winning award show that awards awards to outstanding award show.
And for our Award Show Awards Award Show pre-show,
which incidentally has coveted more than just a few awards,
we switch you live to our correspondent, Manny Milk, who is standing by, foaming at the mouth at the San Luis Obispo Paul Bucker's Foam Dome. Manny. Manny.
Seems like there might be some technical difficulty with our foam dome.
Oh, Manny's got bad laryngitis. Well, that leaves us free to talk about.
Yes, sir.
It starts with an F.
Firesign Theater.
Oh, yes.
Those madcap wacky rapscallions have traded in their goofballs for sensible shoes and have organized themselves to the point where they now do a live show.
No.
Can you believe it? Every month.
There's another Firesign Theater Fools in Space again real soon.
On XM Comedy 150.
You wouldn't have any of those little groat clusters around, would you, Mike?
No, that's Ed, Sam.
Stop torturing me, Ethel.
Saturday nights, Tuesday afternoons, and in the wee hours, Thursday morning.
Only on XM Comedy 150.
Well, golly, what'll they think of next? Them Firesign Theater fools and space fellas ain't really going away.
No, they're just setting a spell. And just grab your corn cob, do the same. It's XM Comedy 150 right here.
I'm sitting on my corn cob.
Yeah, that was the tag.
Wow,
yeah.
This is how
you met the Firesign, because you were producing these promos for Sirius XM?
So,
not Sirius XM, it was just XM then, wasn't it?
That was how I really met them. I sort of, you know, met them as a fan at the exit door in Boston. But then Peter Bergman really became the person that I corresponded with the most when I was working at XM Radio. This is after K-Rock. So I went WBCN to K-Rock in New York with Howard Stern and all those people. And then a few years of doing various things, and then XM Comedy. I became like the main comedy producer.
Yeah, and the Firesign Theater was hired to help develop the comedy network for
XM. Right, right. So I was given the task of creating the promos for the
Firesign show. Fools in Space.
And I wrote a script up, and people said, oh, well, you can't expect them. They won't do the script that you wrote. They're just going to change everything. And I imagined it sounding a certain way, the way that just sounded.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sent it off to you guys in California. I was in New York. And then you guys ended up doing it exactly as I wrote it.
Yeah, we didn't have to worry about it.
which blew my mind. And Peter basically said, oh, yeah, you understood us, so we just did it. And I was like, oh, my God, that's the greatest compliment I ever got in my life, was the fact that the Firesign Theater actually – read what I
respected
wrote.
Respected what you wrote.
Yeah, yeah. Because
it was funny.
I truly understood them.
Yep, you did.
Yeah.
You got the whole psychedelic
side.
So that was them.
That was Firesign Theater, produced by me to sound as much like the records as possible.
Boy, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, which twin's the clone? Well, the answer may surprise you, but not.
Salamander. If you say this enough, a terrarium should slowly start to form around you, within you, without you.
Surrounded by a thin, thin, thin all-digital shell. And inside, it's delicious. In fact, these are the only genuine, genetically modified, semi-organic whole beef halves endorsed by the Firesign Theater themselves. Don't believe me? I wouldn't. Just ask this one here.
Well, you know, Harv, the greatest thing about these little honeys is now... Here, look at this. Just pull the wings off. And they don't scream too much. They're the perfect snack for Todd or Maude to accompany the next broadcast of the Firesign Theater Fools in Space on XM Satellite Radio.
And when would this be heard? A about, Clem?
I don't know, but I'll bet this announcer does.
The richly textured sounds of the Firesign Theater's Fools in Space can be heard Saturdays at 9 p.m. in the East, 6 p.m. in the West, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. in the East, 12 noon in the West, and Thursdays at 3 a.m. in the East and midnight in the West.
That's got to be the worst to tag out with those kind of call-out times.
Oh, I know.
No, it's the worst. You have to have a piece of paper. You still get confused.
Yeah. You're putting 5 pounds of potatoes into a 1 pound bag. Yeah.
But that's a good idea. You produced all of that. Your whole
Yeah. And that became my especially first on tape recorders. My parents indulged me when I was a tiny child. They would buy me the cheap little reel-to-reel tape recorders, me and my brother used to make fake radio shows and TV shows on the tape recorders. And
God, there were so many of us nerds back then. Yeah. I did the same
Shadow
thing.
Shadow Stevens was the youngest disc jockey in America for a while.
So there's several people that I talked to that I know. It's just sort of how we started. And like Steven Spielberg, I made 8mm movies too. Mm-hmm. Epic science fiction and monster movies that, of course, weren't very epic. They were just basically, Godzilla models and garbage cans. But how we got started. And then I went from analog to digital.
Mm-hmm.
First on the Roland DM800 digital workstation, and then I learned Pro Tools. And I would never want to go back to anything after doing Pro Tools.
Yeah, or doing anything digitally.
Oh, no. And even analog. I mean, analog sounds great, but now Pro Tools is now at the point – I'm not being paid for this, folks – at the point where it sounds every bit as good as
do you think that today you're able to do sort of your best work ever because of the tools?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I feel that way, too. Yeah.
Pro Tools, for folks who are not technically proficient.
It's a DAW, a digital audio workstation.
Uh-huh.
It's a software that allows you to edit audio and mix audio. And extremely robust program.
And you don't need a pair of scissors and tape to put all the pieces together.
No, indeed.
But it was a good place to start. Cutting tape when you were young. It was a good place to start.
And after I worked at K-Rock in New York, I got a brief job with a production company that I'll remain nameless that they didn't have digital yet. This is like 1996, 97.
The name was Remain Nameless? That's a good name for a company.
They were called that.
Shall Remain Nameless. It's a good name.
And I had already learned how to do digital production, and they only had reel-to-reel tape, and I had to go back after using digital for a while. I had to go back to doing reel-to-reel.
Ooh.
And it was like...
What is reality?
Yeah, and it was the analogy I have is it was like having learned how to drive a Porsche and then being, handed a bunch of Fred Flintstone sticks and, and having to basically go back to being Fred Flintstone.
Yeah, but those Flintstone sticks and stones last like sticking stones. I have to say that all of my stuff that I did on tape still sounds like I did it yesterday.
Yeah.
You can't say that about much of the digital media.
Not the earlier ones.
Yeah.
Now it's good. Now it's way better.
I met you more recently in your capacity as a producer and also a songwriter.
Oh, yes.
In a series of characters based on the Dr. Seuss books.
Oh, yeah.
For a children's toy called the Tony Box.
Yes, right? Indeed. Tony's Toys are a toy company. They put out these little figures about 3 inches high. And they're of all the popular characters, like, the Little Mermaid and the Lion King and the Sesame Street characters. And then they hired me in around 2021, 2020, to start making their Dr. Seuss series. So they're little – you put the little figure, it's got a – each of the figures has a
– magnetic base.
A magnet and a chip on the bottom. So you put the – Little Mermaid.
I thought they had a chip
thing
on their shoulder.
Well, that's me.
Oh,
you put the thing on top of the box. This little dedicated box. It's about the size of a 45.
It's a little speaker.
Box.
It's a little speaker box.
And then you put the thing on top, and it loads it up, and then it says, "Hi, I'm the Little Mermaid, and this is blah blah." So these are the Dr. Seuss figures, and I was so happy to be able to hire my friend and hero Phil Proctor to be the voice of the Cat in the Hat, the Grinch.
The Grinch.
Horton the Elephant,
uh-huh.
And then a few other characters
which
that have to remain.
We can't talk about yet.
We can't talk about them yet. But
it's a real page turner.
Yeah, it's
Fritz the cat.
Fritz. No,
this is still for children. That I can't say what
friend,
it is.
That was my friend Skip Hinnant, who did the voice for that.
Yeah,
I worked with at Yale.
Oh man! So this is your cat.
This I guess is an excerpt from my Cat in the Hat.
Oh, here's Phil.
Oh yeah.
They need one more cat, and I know just the one. Look close. In my hand, I have little cat V. On his head are cats W, X, Y, and Z. Z is too small to see, so don't try. You cannot. But Z is the cat who will clean up that spot. Now here is the Z you can't see,
said the cat.
And I bet you can't guess what he has in his hat.
Yep, yeah, we're not allowed to play more than 30 seconds of that.
Oh.
It's dedicated stuff. It doesn't come out on a cassette or a CD or anything.
That's right.
You can only hear these amazingly
well-produced
stories.
With original music and
by
song.
Greta Gertler Gold. Greta Gertler Gold. Look her up.
GGG? Triple G?
Well, yes, but she does. She records under the name Greta Gertler. Gertler.
Huh.
And she's this incredibly wonderful pop musician and composer.
She's Australian, is she?
She is Australian, and she's working on some Broadway stuff now. Hopefully, it'll make it to Broadway. It's certainly Broadway worthy. She's an amazing
composer. She moved from Down Under to Brooklyn, I understand.
Yeah, but if you look her up and Google her music, she's on Spotify and all the Spotify.
She's a wonderful musician. She really is.
Her own records, the Greta Gertler albums, are just, if you like Brian Wilson and the Beatles and just melodic, beautiful music, you will like what she does, for sure. So proud to have been composing and making. What's wonderful is I'll go to sleep. I'll think, I got to make a thing for the Cat in the Hat. And I'll start to think of some music in my head. And then I would call her and say, hey, what about da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then she would get together on her thing, and she understood what I was actually making as little memos of musical things, because I'm not a great musician. I can sort of eke out some things on the keyboard, but I can sing,
right?
But I'm not a musician.
I chose to sing ultimately over the violin because I can carry my instrument with me wherever I went.
Exactly. Right. And
I can't imagine you playing violin.
But she
Why
really
not?
I just can't.
Well, here, look at this.
Okay, now I can.
Wow.
See? Okay,
yeah.
Now I can.
Your fingers here.
You play your voice so well, I never even think of you having an appendage of any kind.
Well, it's like Jack Benny, too.
Like Jack Benny.
So anyway, she would take these little things that I would hum, and she would create these orchestral, beautiful, full-spectrum things. And that's what's fun about the Tony Box is you can listen to it over the little speaker that's built into the Tony Box, but then you plug in the headphones, and it's actually full, high-resolution waves. They're even better than the wave files that
better
you hear.
Better than tidal waves.
Or a CD.
Yeah.
And they sound fantastic through headphones. So the idea is we're making music for these things. Dr. Seuss toys.
And yet it is absolutely the Seuss family representative kept an eye on everything that we did to make sure that we were reading the words of the book so kids can follow along.
Right.
And a few things were changed to make them more PC than they were back in the day. Very few things. But, you know, instead of shooting animals, you'd take pictures of them. You'd shoot them with a camera.
Yeah, there were a couple of changes there that they made. But
did they shoot animals in the original?
There are hunters in the in one of
there
the
is, there's
stories.
No there's no wholesale slaughter.
I don't remember
but,
that.
But, it's not but Bambi, they, or Blambi, as we say.
But they did Blambi. they did indeed have lots of things where they're pursuing the critters and that's just been a
Speaking of Blambi, you produced something that's kind of twisted and dark with one of our well-known cartoon characters out there, Elmer Fudd.
Well, yes. Yeah. So this is. I should mention that one of the great people that I worked with, and started with at WBCM. We both started on the listener line. Is the great voice artist Billy West?
Oh yeah.
And I ended up working with Billy for the better part of 20 years from WBCN, and then the company brought him over to K-Rock in New York, where he became well-known with Howard Stern. Billy is best known as doing the voice of Ren and Stimpy and Fry, Dr. Zoidberg, Professor Farnsworth, whoever the hero character is that is on that show. And yeah, and I was really fortunate to work with Billy and do quite a few bits with him, both at WBCN and at K-Rock in New York when he started working with Howard Stern. We would write up things. This is Billy. Billy West. All Billy.
More than two decades after The Doors, he's still hot. He's sexy. And he's hunting rabbits. He's Elmer Fudd.
Why design a storm? And rabbits in the woods.
Forget Val Kilmer. Elmer Fudd is Jim Morrison.
Rabbit? Yes, Doc? I want to kill you.
What a maroon.
Kill the rabbit. Kill the rabbit. Kill the rabbit. Come on, baby, wipe my fire. Try to set the night on fire!
Mr. Fudd, Mr. Fudd, you've gone too far.
Leave me alone.
There's a city ordinance against cooking a rabbit on stage.
Let's just say I was testing the bounds of reality.
There are things known, and there are things unknown. And in between, there is Elmer Fudd.
Nuts! A badass and twip. Wabbits! Wabbits! Wabbits!
Elmer Fudd is Jim Morrison, coming soon to a theater near you.
Boy, who knew that side of Elmer?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was just one of those crazy ideas.
Here's another one you did.
Another drop.
This is Gumby the movie.
Okay, now I wrote this one
when
Batman the movie came out.
Uh-huh.
And so this one is written by me, and then it features Billy West and myself as the voices. Billy is the prominent voice in this.
Francis Ford Coppola, in association with Dino De Laurentiis Entertainment, presents the dramatic motion picture event of the decade. Rex Reed calls it astounding. The Miami Herald declares it animated and bizarre, filled with a peculiar brand of psychosexual tension unheralded in film history. Michael Keaton.
What are you?
I'm Gumby.
Gumby, the movie, co-starring Jeff Goldblum as Pokey.
But Gumby, does Toy Town really need giant bees that build their own cages?
Sean Penn as Prickle.
I'm telling you, that's no ordinary cantina dog!
Gumby.
Kim Basinger as Goo.
Oh, Gumby, you really make me change my shape.
And Jack Nicholson as the Blockheads.
Wait till they get a load of me. And me. And me. And me. And me.
Prepare yourself for an epic adventure of danger, romance, and clay.
For Upper Maryland, Gumby, you've got to do everything backwards.
Gumby, the movie, coming soon to a theater near you. A Plasticine Pictures release.
Happy birthday to Jack Nicholson. He turned something yesterday.
Oh. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Wow, that's really funny.
Yeah. Well, you know.
What? How did you assemble a cast like that? That must cost you a fortune.
Oh, right? Yeah. Yeah, they did it cheap because they didn't really exist.
Our guest today is Bill Cates, and you're listening to Phil and Ted's Sexy Boomer Show. And you can hear all our past shows on our website at sexyboomershow.com. sexyboomershow.com, and on your favorite podcast platforms.
That's right. You can visit my messy mind at planetproctor.com. And, of course, you can always get more Firesign Theater stuff at firesigntheater.com.
Hey, Bill, so yes. you came out west like I did,
mm-hmm.
and did you come out to do radio?
No, I came out – actually, I came out – not to make this too much about Billy, but I was emailing Billy just saying – you know, what should I do now? Because I was out of work at the XM and Sirius merged, so I was looking for something to do, and I really wanted to branch out to do more voice work myself.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered, you know, I was one of those kids in elementary school who was the funny kid who did funny voices. Then, of course, I ended up working with Billy for years and sort of always let him do the voices. And then one day at XM, I discovered, wait a second, I can actually do, you know, hey, what's up, Doc? You know, oh, my God, I can do that.
You can do that.
I can do that, too. It's
I
not,
can do that.
Not,
I can
to,
do
not
that.
To hone in on anybody's territory, but, you know, I just realized I have great flexibility, and I can do any one of a number of voices. So I started to branch out and try to do voice work on my own. And Billy said in an email, hey, if you want to do what we do and you're one of us, which you are, Bill, then you need to come out here to L.A. because this is mm-hmm. where it happens.
Go west, young man.
And so just that one little sentence made me say, hey, you know, I got to come out here. And so I did in 2012. And I've had varying success. I've also really been learning how to act as a person on camera, which is totally different from acting on stage, which is the thing I did forever.
And you're doing a role you're going to work next week, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. I just filmed something a few days ago for TV. I can't say what it is yet officially, but
wait, is that thing that you moved up, you went up to you had to drive up to what, Fresno for?
No, that was for a commercial.
Okay.
And then there's a thing that's going to be on TV soon.
A mystery thing.
Yeah, I haven't done anything really notable yet.
Right, now, the character that you're playing is Dr. Moreau. Well, you can say that. Moreau is H.G. Wells, so what
yeah,
the
yeah, yeah. I think that's just no copyright on that. Nah. But I can't really reveal too much about that yet.
No, because you haven't done it yet.
Yeah, but I'm really looking forward to that. And I think I'm finally figuring out how to act in front of a camera, which is totally different from the way you act on stage or in front of a microphone. Well,
we will be acting on stage in front of a microphone
evening. What are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing a show at the Golden Age Theater. It's a short story by L. Ron Hubbard and somebody else. He collaborated with somebody on it called The Last Drop. And for many years now, they have been recreating the wonderful stories that L. Ron Hubbard wrote during the golden age of Pulp Fiction. He was amazing and prolific. And all this was before all of the religious nonsense and everything. But it was before he applied his mind to trying to create a school that would teach people how to basically use their personality to their own benefit.
Right.
In any event, the stories are funny. They cover, you know, he does pirate stories and aviatrix stories and voodoo stories and detective stories. This one is called The Last Drop, and it's a fantasy about a strange elixir that makes people either big or very small.
It's really fun.
You play three parts or so, right?
Yeah. It's just a great excuse to get up there and
the L. Ron Hubbard Theater at the Golden Age Theater in the Artists, what is it called, building?
Authors Services.
Authors Services building on Hollywood Boulevard mm-hmm. near the Chinese Theater. They do a state-of-the-art.
Great sound effects,
great music.
It's all beautiful.
I went to see you perform there once.
That's right.
And I was really struck by how high-end their facility is to produce strictly audio drama.
It's just pure fun for me.
It's great fun. And it's tremendously well supported. There's backdrop pictures and little costume touches. And they created they use teleprompters so that you don't even have to hold a script in your hand. And each production is different. Some of them, no scripts in your hand. You move around, you do things. This one we're going to do more like a standard radio show.
And with our dear friend Jim Meskimen.
Talented, the Billy West of the West, Jim Meskimen.
One of the most amazing talents I've ever come
across.
Isn't
he, though?
And he's been on our show.
He sure has.
Yeah. Some of him.
Some of him. A few of him.
And R.F. Daly is directing us, and he's a wonderful, wonderful.
Who's the end user here?
These pieces were recorded and released in a large series of CDs.
You've done a whole bunch of them.
I did almost 100 voices for them. We did it over almost a three-year period. And they are the short stories of L. Ron Hubbard, The Golden Age of Pulp Fiction. And it's a series that take them out at the libraries if you want.
I wonder if they're on podcast platforms.
And they're beautifully produced, original music and everything. It's really great.
I'm not sure.
I don't know if they're on if they're available.
So you're both going to perform and
tonight.
And you're not going to join the church?
No, you don't have to join the church.
No, certainly not.
And the people that we're working with are absolutely delightful.
Yeah.
No proselytizing or anything.
I was raised a Unitarian, so I'm good with, like, if this was at a synagogue or a Buddhist temple, I'd do it.
Whatever the religion is,
if they're doing radio theater and they're not doing bad things,
or entertainment and all of that, sure.
This Kennedy bit, this is an interesting
bit. Yes. Drop-in.
So, now after. after I worked at K-Rock in New York with Howard Stern and all those wonderful people, and I got to meet all sorts of colorful characters in New York, like, you know, Ron Jeremy and Donald Trump.
they put them together. Well, that's right.
A combination.
Yeah, they were great together.
They were born again.
I'm kidding, of course, folks. I don't want to lie.
I did hang out with Ron Jeremy.
Did you? Yeah, a lot of us did.
Well, Ron Jeremy hung out for a lot of us.
I mean, let me put it this way. I went to a screening that my friend wrote the movie for that he was in. It's not like I hung out with him, but I ended up going out with all the stars of the 80s.
Wow.
All the biggest porn stars. Jamie Gillis. We all went out to get drinks.
Yeah.
I actually hung out with the women, of course.
Right, right.
And wow, what an interesting conversation that was. But go on.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
Let's get some of them on the show.
It was a colorful time in New York. It certainly was. And I had a lot of fun then. And I got to know a lot of people, including people from a magazine called High Times magazine.
Yeah, I remember it. Fireside was featured in High Times.
Right, right. And that was like the marijuana Bible.
Yes.
And I don't know if they still exist, but I ended up working with one of the editors there after I worked at K-Rock. I want to be sure to point out that I mentioned Howard Stern, but
yeah.
I was not part of Howard Stern's crew. I was hired by the station to produce for the station. So I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying I worked as part of Howard Stern's crew.
We wouldn't hold that against you.
I know, but they were very adamant about, don't ever say you worked for Howard Stern, even though, of course, I ended up working with Stern a lot. But they were very much a separate entity, kind of almost, even though they were part of it.
And you told me that in the movie, the Howard Stern movie, which I
– Private Parts.
Private Parts, which I did voices for. I really enjoyed
that's the, right.
the
yeah,
film.
You did ADR.
Yeah. You said that they recreated the studio.
That was me.
Yeah.
I worked with Howard when he was still – before he was a comedian.
Oh, the
– when he was a straight
WRNW.
DJ. WRNW. Yeah. And so
– they made it look like that. Yeah.
Oh, he went back to the same house and he rebuilt the whole place.
Wow.
That was amazing. Yeah, I got to hand it to him for that.
That movie really surprised me.
Yeah.
It was very
because he's honest. That's the secret to his success, in my opinion, is he's honest about himself.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of material there.
For sure. Yeah. I was really glad to have, the
opportunity.
The times when I worked with him. I would do like PSAs with him and stuff sometimes. And
great.
I ended up working on some of the bits and stuff, especially Bill.
And Trump, Ted again told me that Trump was very anxious to be on the show, right? All the time.
Actually, I used to see like people like Mr. Trump in the lobby and stuff.
Were lobbying for what?
They were trying to get messages to Howard.
Jesus.
Wow. Really?
And they would stop people like me in the – there were a lot of people that would do this. They would stop me and they would say, hey, you work up there, don't you? And I'd be like, yeah. Could you just give Howard a message? Just tell him that, Janine said that, Larry wasn't going to be over at the thing and really he just misunderstood the whole thing. Like some whole little thing that I had no idea what they were talking about. But just be sure that Howard knows that, Barbara isn't really mad at him. And I'd be like, it's not my job to be his messenger.
No.
But then I would see his producer, Gary Delabate, and I'd say, hey, Gary,
tell Howard that Barbara's not really mad.
Well, Ron Jeremy's in the lobby, and he wanted me to, forward this message to you. And Gary would be like, yeah, sure, whatever. Yeah. And I don't want to go too into that.
Well, let's get into some marijuana.
But very quickly, I ended up becoming the producer of the High Times Radio Hour.
Woo!
Ah.
And this was one of the many bits that I did with a fine reader, a talent, very funny guy. Malcolm McKinnon was one of the editors there, and he also was the host of the
podcast of the show.
And this is my first experience really working with Pro Tools and producing stuff on my own in my house, really. And this was one of the bits that we did for the High Times Radio Hour. I was very proud of this one.
Marijuana's march through history. 1962, at a top secret poolside location just outside of Washington, D.C.
Marilyn, would you like another beer, my sweet?
Sure, Jack. Sounds swell.
Okay then, Bobby, could you get Marilyn and myself some more beers from the fridge?
Not until I get another kiss from Marilyn there.
Now, hang on just a minute, little Mr. Attorney General, brother of mine.
Okay.
It just so happens to be my turn with Marilyn here, and your turn with the rubber ducky float toy.
Now, hold on 1 second there, Jack. Mom always did like you best.
Boys, here. I got this from my houseboy. He's Mexican.
Now you're talking, Marilyn. Is this more of that Michoacan?
God bless you there, Jack. Yes, we should light this up at this time, I suggest.
That is quite nice, Bobby.
Better than those Cuban cigars.
I'm going to sing happy birthday to you at your party. I swear.
Now, Marilyn, before we get carried away, my family, as you well know, has always avoided scandal of any kind. And
stay tuned for more of Marijuana's March Through History.
Any monkey business of your kind.
Yeah, we did a bunch of those at High Times Radio. And then from High Times, I went to XM Satellite Radio and started producing comedy and music. We had all these different channels.
Sure.
So one day we'd have like Dolly Parton in the morning, then Luciano Pavarotti at noon, and then...
Oh, that was an album.
Yeah. And then Robert Downey Jr. would come in for an interview with Billy Bob Thornton right afterwards.
Wow.
I mean, it was crazy. We had all these crazy days. And one of the people that I was very fortunate to get to know during this time was another one of my heroes. I've managed to get to know a few of my heroes, Phil Proctor being prime among them. And another one was the great Neil Innes. If you don't know who Neil Innes was, he was part of the Monty Python troupe. He did all the music for Monty Python. So he's the one who sings Bravely Bold Sir Robin. Anyway, we struck up a friendship as a result of doing a bunch of things, and I managed to actually perform with him a bunch of times. And I did a few interviews with him that ended up on XM Satellite Radio that haven't been heard since then. This is an excerpt from one of them where he talks about the great – of course, Neil Innes was also part of the Bonzo Dog Band and the Ruddles. And so here he is talking about a Bonzo Dog Band song, which is one of my favorite pieces of sort of music concrete comedy. Yeah, it speaks for itself.
For that, I mean, Joel Druckmann, who was then the bass player, was interviewing people, and Viv literally was in his underpants with a pair of rabbit ears on his head, hopping about on the pavement in the high street. And that's why the guy said, "Look at that, that's not right. Look at him, he's got a head on him like a rabbit." And that was referring to Viv, who was actually doing it. We didn't need to be psychedelic, Bill.
Exactly. It just was there. You're just describing reality. or you're letting others describe your reality.
Because we were actually wondering ourselves, you know, what was normal. It became quite a debate. Because there we were, we just sort of left art school. And we were doing things we'd never dreamed we would be doing. We were sitting in a van, you know, at least once a week and driving hundreds of miles. We were playing shows every night. And we got kind of stir crazy in a way, so we started to examine it collectively, and also Viv had this idea: it would be nice to sort of do a chart, as it were, of the track, and it was a linear chart, and it started off with, you know, waves breaking, and out of this kind of primordial soup would come these creatures, you know, we are. And so on, and it would build into this kind of, you know, modern day frantic, you know, da 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 da, bam, 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 bam.
And here come some normals. They look like normal Hawaiians.
Well, you didn't mention what much. Oh,
do you think you're normal?
Yes, quite normal.
Okay, here comes one.
Say.
It's not for me to deter, really, is it? I mean, it's for a psychiatrist to deter these things, isn't it?
They like their food, and they are very nice people.
Oh, it's all right, isn't it?
I've got fangs.
Smart. Short back side.
It's typically normal.
No, it's just not crazy. It is unusual. Well, it's like a rabbit. He's got a head on him like a rabbit.
What's the name?
We are normal.
We are normal.
We are normal, and we want our freedom. So that was Neil Innes talking it up, as they say.
That's well known.
Yeah,
it's a well known weird.
Well, the Bonzo
Dog Band.
Their most famous song was "I'm the Urban Spaceman."
I think we're all Bonzos on this.
Their most famous song is "I'm the Urban Spaceman," which was, of course, produced by Paul McCartney.
So they were contemporaries of the Beatles. They hung out with the Beatles. Neil Innes was great friends with George Harrison,
mm-hmm.
and his wife Yvonne actually ended up being his
paramour.
Ended up being George and Olivia's gardener. She's a great gardener.
You heard it here first, folks.
I think she's still doing that.
True.
She takes care of all the beautiful gardens.
The weed. She takes care of the weed.
The flowers and things.
How about the octopus's garden under the sea?
She might have done that too. But anyway, yeah. But that was a great time, and I'm very sad that we've lost Neil. But what was that last thing that we had? We had one more thing.
Oh, well. There's our jazz station in New York called WBGO, and you did an all-blues promo for them.
Yeah, I'm just super proud of this piece.
WBGO, BGO, 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 BGO.
Full circle in my life.
Oh, that's cool.
That's a beautiful being promo. Here with you guys. Thank you so much for having me here.
It was a pleasure. We could talk on and on and on. Bill Cates, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm looking forward
to continuing our collaboration artistically and
otherwise. Yeah, well, break a leg tonight.
Thank you. Break a tongue.
Thank you. You're listening to Phil and Ted's Sexy Boomer Show. We're here every Tuesday at 1 o'clock for Anything Goes show.
That's right.
And you can also catch our shows on our website, sexyboomershow.com.
Next week, we'll have Jamie Alcroft and Sarah Kawahara, the proud parents of Haley Kiyoko, among others. And it's bound to be a very interesting conversation.
And enjoy the week, folks. It's very consequential what's going on these days on the college campuses and in New York in the courtrooms.
Yale was in the news.
Boy,
oh, my God.
Democracy being tried.
Democracy rules, we hope.
Did you try democracy yet?
See you next week.